Hello everyone, and I'm here, your host Hernando del Castillo, and we're here with Victor Diaz-Herman, Chief Executive Officer of Pride Lines Miami, and I'm so excited to have him with us on I'm Just Gaying, and you know, just share moments with us and get a little bit more information about the organization and get a little bit of information. Me and him have known each other for a long time already, and I've actually been part of Pride Lines, and I've seen the growth of it as a volunteer and many other, you know, avenues. But I'm very excited to be here with him. And hi, Victor, thank you for being here with me. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time, and I know you're busy, but I'm happy you're here with us. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hi, and please, I'm always happy to give you time, make time for you.
Thank you. So,
yeah, I'm Victor. I'm the Chief Executive Officer here at Pride Lines. We are Miami's LGBTQ Community Center, South Florida's LGBTQ, oldest LGBTQ service agency. Mm-hmm. I should say direct service agency. Mm-hmm. Going on 40 years now, we were founded as an LGBTQ youth agency. We were founded by youth, for youth. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, expanded our mission to be able to serve our young people throughout their lifetime. Mm-hmm. So from our centers in Miami and Miami Beach and our satellite location in Cutler Bay and programs that we offer around Miami-Dade County, we really serve LGBTQ youth, young adults who are on the verge of or are currently experiencing homelessness, mm-hmm. and people living with HIV mm-hmm. or affected by HIV, and the community at large. So members of our trans community, members of the older community, bisexual community, everyone at large. We are first and foremost a safe and affirming space, mm-hmm. and we welcome everyone who wishes to be a part of that and contribute to that.
I know it's a great space. I walk around it and I see the growth. I know you were, where were you? You were somewhere before a while, and then you came over here, and then you acquired this other space. Because you, where were you guys?
We moved around over the years, but our last location was in Miami Shores, mm-hmm. in a space that was 975 square feet.
Wow.
Where we offered everything that we basically offer from this space, mm-hmm. but creatively.
You move things around.
This table's creative.
Many things.
Exactly. So now we're in this space, which is just under 9,000 square feet. Our wow. Miami Beach location is 2,500 square feet.
That's amazing.
And yeah, it gives us a lot more flexibility and and also, you know, because of the nature of the work that we do, mm-hmm. and the fact that transportation in Miami-Dade County, mm-hmm. Especially public transportation, is not the easiest, mm-hmm. We also bring our programs and services to meet our community where they're at. So we'll take them out to Kendall, Homestead.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's really, really awesome.
Thanks.
So did you see yourself in this work when you started? Where do you see yourself before, at the beginning?
So at the beginning. When I came out of the womb.
When you came out of the womb, you're like, Pride Lines.
That was it. Bam. That's going to be my future. No, I did not see myself doing this work. In fact, I studied English, creative writing, and got a minor in broadcast journalism for mm-hmm. television and radio. And that was my goal coming out of college, mm-hmm. Was to try to get into the industry and either, mm-hmm. you know, be a news broadcaster or work on radio.
Nice.
Yeah, but I wasn't willing to move to remote destinations, and I also have a twitch that every once in a while under stress gets a little bit worse, and so I don't think anybody wanted to see me twitching on TV.
You never know. You never know.
Maybe.
These days,
that might be the
how many things are. We would have been like, you would have been the twitchy newscast.
That
would have been your thing. Like, here's Victor.
Every meme would be about me twitching across the screen. So, but no, I didn't.
I mean, it's very minimal. You really.
Oh, it gets bad sometimes. But anyways, I didn't go into that. And I actually started right out of college working for the LGBTQ Film Festival. At the time, it was called Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Now it's Outshine, mm-hmm. which also, full circle, is our tenant right below us, mm-hmm. on the first floor of our center.
That's nice.
Yeah. And at the time, I wasn't even out. I wasn't out to myself. So I didn't really see a career in as being an LGBTQ activist, mm-hmm. And an advocate. And then I was introduced to Pride Lines by a coworker at the film festival who was the interim ED, and she invited me to the LGBTQ prom. It was the time just for, it was our LGBT youth prom. And I will never forget being in that room and for the first time being in a space with all queer people. And I grew up with lesbian mothers in Miami-Dade County. So it wasn't unusual for me to be around queer people, but I had never been in a space where, with queer young people. And at that time, that looked much closer to me in age than now.
Than now, that's than what we have to say now.
Exactly. So I was just blown away by the sense of like comfort and the lack of fear of prejudice and of, of ridicule in that space. Young people that felt free to be who they were, to identify as they identify, to present as they identify, to hold their partner's hands, to dance with them, and to just have, be able to be themselves in a safe space. And I thought it was so amazing. So I got involved as a volunteer, and then I joined the board. And then at one point, the organization was close to closing its doors for the second time or third time in its history. And the board, I guess, had nothing to lose. And they said, hey, would you mind stepping into the position of ED? And I thought, sure, why not?
Sure.
Let me give it a shot. You know, the logic of a 28-year-old at that time. and so I did. And, you know, I had, and I have, because I'm also the chief operating officer at a publishing company that happens also, you know, it's been in my family for over 50 years now.
Oh, wow.
So I had at the time, and I continue to have, the ability to do this work, but also supplement my income through my business. And so I figured at that time, you know, I've got nothing to lose. Let me give it a shot. I was really passionate. I am really passionate about the mission, the work that we do. I had a connection to it. I had just come out 2 years prior.
Really?
Yeah. And so I jumped
in. Came out at 26. And you had lesbian moms.
And I had lesbian moms.
And you were like, I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe I am. I'm not.
I went through all of that.
Yeah?
I did. You know, everybody else knew I was gay.
Your moms were like, he's gay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had been asked. I had been asked by my moms, by my mom's friends, my friends.
Really?
Yeah, and I always would just say, like, no, or I don't know, or I don't want to label myself, because I knew that I was attracted to people of the same gender, but I also knew that I was attracted to people of, you know, to people who identified as female. I was trying to explore that, and I felt like whatever I say right now is at the moment, it felt so definitive. It was before I knew that sexuality, you know, is fluid. And I didn't want to make a declaration and all of a sudden that's what I was.
Which is awesome. You were ahead of your time, and that was ahead of your time, because that's what people back in the days back in the 90s.
Those are the days now. Days are like, for me, like the 30s and the 40s.
In the 90s, when I was coming out, either you were gay or you were straight. And there was nothing in between any of that. So it was very definitive. Like you said, that when you came out, it wasn't like these days, that there's this sexual fluidity that I really appreciate and love. Because you don't have to just be like, I'm this.
Absolutely.
And back when I came out in the 90s too. I mean, it came out to 2000. Like, I was 19. I was...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
And it was more like, this is what I am. And my mom's like, okay. If I would have come out as bi, then it would have been like, huh, you're confused. But now it's like, it's cool.
Yeah. It's cool. I think... You know, we've definitely come a long way. Yes, sexuality is fluid. Gender is not a binary. And what's amazing is that more and more people are recognizing that and are creating the space for people to be who they are and not judging. I mean, granted, we're not in a world that's fully there.
Exactly.
But we've made progress, and
But Pride Lines is there, so that's what's important.
We definitely are there. We're still growing, and you know, always looking for ways to deliver our programs and services, and to be here for our community, as best as possible and as fully as possible. So
yeah, and I've experienced Pride Lines in many assets. I've volunteered. I've gone to events. Mm-hmm. I've seen you guys. I was at, when you were just youth organization mm-hmm. at the beginning. So I went to like a roller. You guys to do the roller skate.
I went as part of a winter party.
Yeah, winter party. I went to the roller. I still have my. I use that winter party volunteer T-shirt. That's a sleeping T-shirt. They're like, yeah. Where do you get that? And I'm like, girl.
That was years ago.
I was like, girl. That was a long time.
That was before I even chaired the event, which was years ago.
And I volunteered for that, and I did white party and all of that stuff. Wow. And actually you introduced me, because since we've known each other for a while mm-hmm. now, you're like, hey, you know, there's some things going on here. And I'm like, sure,
that doesn't
I'm
sound
gay.
Sketchy at all.
Sure, I'm gay. Let me do it. I'm gay. Let me do it. So I've seen the growth and just coming into the center, volunteering at the center also at moments, yeah. and seeing you build all these events, and even having family members that are bisexual and that are, you know, that I can bring here and can be like, hey, this is a safe space for you to be who you want to be.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that I'm very grateful for what you have put here together, and for that 28-year-old naive person, might say, that took a chance and look. Where we're, I mean,
100%.
Look where we're here now. This place has boomed and grown, and it's amazing.
It's definitely different, but I don't want to say different, because we're still rooted in our youth work, and we mm-hmm. still are committed to serving our youth mm-hmm. first and foremost. But it's definitely at a different point, not just in how we operate, but in the work that we do.
I like that. I like that you always mention that the youth is, and the impact that, you know, just in our community. I think that I always strive to be a voice for LGBTQ, but not only LGBTQ, but being Hispanic LGBTQ, mm-hmm. because it's just that on its own has its own stigma. That mm-hmm. on its own has its own palpable things. That on its own has its own, like, comes with its own, like, you know, religion and the way we're brought up and what it means to be a man and what it means to be a gay man and how we're seen. And, you know, even through my comedy, I really make really light of it. Like, hey, my uncle's like, no seas marica. And so when he says that to me, it's like this whole way of like, he doesn't say it in a bad way. He says it like in a loving, like, I don't want people to hurt you way.
Yeah.
And in all of that, there's that Hispanic background in all of that. It's like that bone, that backbone to like being Hispanic mm-hmm. and being LGBTQ that also. So, and I've seen a lot. I've seen friends that get thrown out of houses because they tell their parents and their parents just.
Yeah. There are challenges in all of our intersecting identities mm-hmm. and definitely culture. You know, our background is one of the large challenges that we all have to overcome mm-hmm. in coming out mm-hmm. and also once you're out and living and feeling like you can live fully as a person.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
So it's...
you have your mom is Hispanic. Mm-hmm. You know, you're... I don't know, like, sometimes I find it weird because I ask people like, if you were born here, do you consider yourself Hispanic? Do you consider yourself Latino? Do you consider yourself a mixture of like these things? So what do you think about that?
I think that's it's an interesting conversation.
Exactly.
Growing up, my biological parents are both Cuban, mm-hmm. a lot of the culture and the traditions that we have come from their parents and where their parents are from, right? Mm-hmm. And like, not that their parents weren't born, my grandparents were born in Cuba as well, mm-hmm. but they had, like, their parents came from Lebanon mm-hmm. and from Spain and mm-hmm. from France. And so there were all these different cultures that were part of what I thought, or I was made to believe, was being Cuban. And so growing up, I always considered myself a Cuban American.
Okay.
So Latinx. But I've realized that just like gender and identity, your race, your ethnicity, your culture, is also fluid. Like, I really have been, after 9/11, I realized I was going to college in Tallahassee, so the state capital. And after 9/11, after flying out, or rather several times of flying out and flying back in to, from home or wherever to go back to school, I was always randomly, air quotes, randomly selected for randomly. A search, right? And that's when I started realizing, wait a second, I'm not what people that are, quote unquote Cuban American look like.
Exactly.
But I'm Cuban American. Why am I being identified and being pulled out among my colleagues or my friends that I'm traveling with? And it was because I have a lot of Arabic features.
Yes.
A lot of darker features. And that's when I started realizing that, I'm not just Cuban American, I'm more, and diving into my Lebanese background and my Lebanese roots.
That's awesome.
And so I really now identify as Middle Eastern.
Oh, really?
And as a Latinx individual.
Wow. That's awesome, though.
Yeah, and I don't understand why that isn't something that more of us are doing. Like, there are things that were deep traditions in my family or culturally that we do that are specific to different elements of our background, of where we come from.
But so do you guys have like Lebanese traditions in your
So Lebanese traditions, not so much, but definitely food and and stories and family members.
Really?
Yeah, I was still in Lebanon.
In Lebanon?
Yeah, predominantly in Mount Lebanon, which is where my family used to live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it's just, it's another element of who I am. And I feel like I don't call it out because I'm lumped under the Cuban American.
Exactly. We get lumped under things. I get lumped under a lot of things. I think because
that
people
sounds
see
like
me.
That's for another conversation.
That's it. In the next, I'm just gained.
What are you lumped under?
What do I get lumped under? So, yeah, I think when people see me, it's funny because people see me and they say, "You're white." And I'm just like,
who? Here in Miami.
People in Miami.
Of course, because here in Miami, you're either white or you're black.
Exactly.
That's,
and I'm
I don't
just
understand.
Like, I'm not white.
It's ridiculous.
And when people say that to me, I find it so like offensive. Like, it's not that I'm offended that you're telling me, but you see clearly that I'm more like Latino, Hispanic. I'm not, but when they see me, they're like, no, you're white. And I was like,
That is cultural racism.
Exactly.
That to me is like clearly people that don't understand that they are people, that we are people of color. And these people who say it are also people of color.
Yes.
And identify as white because they have never lived somewhere or visited somewhere where they aren't the majority.
Exactly.
Miami-Dade County, South Florida is like a bubble.
It is a
and
bubble.
And it is so, I mean, I think it's dangerous, but I think it's also ridiculous that culturally, there's this racism that exists that anywhere else would impact those same people.
Totally. So I'm just, I kind of get a little bit offended. I'm like, no, I'm Hispanic. I'm not even American. I was born in Colombia. So I'm Colombian. I'm 100%. My mom and my dad are Colombian. I migrated here. So, and now I got my citizenship. But when people ask me, where are you from? I can't say I'm from here because I was born in Colombia. So I'm Colombian. So they're like, oh, but you're here. And I was like, yeah, but I was born in Colombia. So, and then the most infuriating thing, which is not because I get infuriated that I get called Mexican. It's just that not everybody's Mexican. So when the first thing that they come and tell me,
cultural
what part
racism.
Of Mexico are you from? And I'm just like, I just like to play the game with them, and I'm like, I tell them some like random like Chapultepec, like, and I'm like, and oh, and your family, they're princes.
They're
prince from Chapultepec. I come from royalty. And I'll just, okay. And it's because not, I have so many Mexican friends and I love them. And listen, I will be honored to be Mexican because Mexico is beautiful.
But you're not Mexican.
But I'm not Mexican. So when you come and tell me, instead of saying what part of South America or even Central America are you from, mm-hmm. you automatically say what part of Mexico are you from. That is their cultural racism.
It's terrible. And racism.
So then I'm glad that there's places like this that I know sometimes it is that, you know, we're pinpointing and picking and we're trying to be correct. But I think it's important also to have that, whole conversation like we're having, like, hey, like everything's fluid. Mm-hmm. We don't have to be just from one thing. And I don't have to label myself just this thing because you want to lump me under, you know, like Cuban American. Mm-hmm. I'm not just a Cuban American.
We're all more than just one thing. We are all more than just the sum of. We are diverse. We all have family histories, and those mm-hmm. family histories, you know, at this, they run deep. They
super deep.
Generations and generations and generations of people that came before you that are why you are the person you are, mm-hmm. and you take away their identities and that part of your history by just saying, oh, this is what I am. Just like, you know, when you think about my family, like my life and the fact that I have gay parents, mm-hmm. Lesbian mothers, mm-hmm. I am not just a product of my father's background and of my mother's background. I'm also a product of my other mother's background, mm. and she's a Jewish woman. Mm. She is the daughter of Jewish individuals whose families before them, whose great-grandparents, you know, experienced the Holocaust. That's part of not my bloodline, mm-hmm. but that's part of my family's history.
Of course.
And I, just because she's not legally my mother, or mm-hmm. well, actually, she is legally my mother because my parents are married.
Oh, well, that's great.
But not by blood, that she's not my blood mother, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that her life's history and her influences didn't influence me and who I am today.
Totally.
She raised me since I was, you know, 5.5 years old. There's way that
she had to.
She's not my mother, or that her or my grandparents, you know, her parents didn't have an influence on who I am.
Exactly.
So it's more than just what.
And what is one this thing. Latinx? Because I've been hearing Latinx, 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 Latinx. What is it?
So that's a great question.
Educate me because I'm really intrigued about this.
Yeah. So gender is fluid. It's not a binary, mm-hmm. right? So we know that there's more than just male and female.
Exactly.
But in certain language. Well, not certain language. In language, we tend to gender things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like slang that we're used to saying. But like, for example, when you refer to a group of people and you go, hey, you guys. Mm-hmm. If there are people that identify as female or that don't identify as female or male,
totally.
You just gendered them. That could trigger them. That could be take them down a journey. And also, it's not right. You need to meet people where they're at and see them for who they are.
Exactly.
Well, in... I'm not sure, in Spanish language, actually, I think in most Latin mm-hmm. languages, everything is, well, not everything, but many things, even inanimate things, mm-hmm. are gendered.
They are.
Una mesa.
Un carro.
¿Y quién dice? Who says that table? What if that table doesn't identify as
that? No, es una carra, es un carro. And like, it's a male. A car is male, not exactly. female. No, es a carra. No, es un carro.
And it's all rooted in like machismo and chauvinism and... So, Latinx mm-hmm. is a way to identify all people who are of Latin experience mm-hmm. without automatically gendering them mm-hmm. as Latino or Latina. The X replaces the gender
awesome. Marker. Awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's one way.
Well,
a lot of people don't gel with it.
They don't.
But that's also the evolution. Like, a lot of people don't gel with the word queer, mm-hmm. but because of their own experiences. Mm-hmm. But it's being reclaimed and...
Yeah, I think I when I first started this podcast, I really, when I did my introduction...
I almost fell off my chair.
He almost fell because he got excited. I said queer, and he's like, eh!
And on the next
episode. And on the next episode. So, and I said, I don't feel I'm gay. Gay. Like, that word to me has been so, and it's so antiquated to me. Like, this gay, straight. It feels old and past. Like, I feel like I am more queer.
Yeah.
I am a Latino queer male.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I heard, I said that, it felt very natural to say it, even in my introduction to I'm Just Gay.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this feels more like who I am. I'm queer.
Mm-hmm.
Not this whole, what people used to just say, gay, straight, this whole like very black and white way of looking at things. Queer is very encompassing of everything that I could be or I could become. Mm-hmm. Because I think even as I grow older, I explore and open my mind to seeing things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I feel like I am attracted to females that transition to male. So I'm attracted to...
You're attracted to a male presenting person?
Yes.
Regardless of their gender identity?
Regardless of their gender
identity. Sexual orientation.
Exactly. So
you're attracted to somebody who presents as male.
Male.
Regardless of anything
else. Regardless of... And I'm just like, oh.
Which, in this, by the way, would be a trans man.
A transgender man. So I'm attracted to trans men.
Okay.
So I was like, that's...
There you go.
That's not... I hadn't seen that part of my development of my sexuality or growth or seeing things or like a spectrum of, you know, fluidity in my life until I was able to explore that. So I was like, wow.
And that aligns with, but is in many ways referred to as pansexual.
Exactly. So then I will be a pan.
Pansexual.
Pansexual. Okay. Yes. I love. Just
not saying that you are.
I'm not saying that. You're like, I'm not labeling you. You label yourself.
Yeah, that's what.
And how many conversations do you have like that a day?
Where I don't label.
Do that. Where you're like, I'm not saying you. I'm not. This is what this is gonna be.
Normally not here at Pride Month, yes. Because here we are all very aware of language.
Yes,
and obviously
yes.
The conversations we have are like this, but. Outside, when I'm talking to family or friends who aren't necessarily either part of the community or if they aren't really that active or that, that rooted, I find myself saying it too, right? Like we're talking about, I'm not saying this, I'm just explaining. I'm giving you my perception or I'm giving you my understanding, but by all means, I'm not the end all be all.
Do you, boo boo?
Exactly.
At the end of that conversation, do you, boo boo?
I'm not changing the gender marker on your license for you. You know, that's another story.
And you know what the funny thing? Even as a queer man in this society, living, I mean, being open, my ex had his best friend was transitioning, and even from male to female, and I found myself. Like having issues, like not because I wanted to, but like those pronouns, and I really those like calling him he when he was a she, when because you know like it was a thing that I really had to be aware of, and I was like, man, this is something that I really need to be aware of because this woman, she is a woman,
absolutely,
and so I was like. And is that a lot? Is that conversations that you guys have here at Pride Lines and you guys have like whole like panels about and discussions about and things about?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one, we do provide trainings out in the community around gender and sexual orientation, gender identity and sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Part of those trainings include understanding pronouns, understanding the importance of language, unexpectedly or unintentionally using, you know, that hey guys or, you know, bro or whatever, which is colloquial, can cause harm to somebody who has, let's say, transitioned from male to female and has had to fight to identify, be seen as who they are in that moment, even if it's unintentionally being called man or bro or guy or whatever.
Exactly.
Could automatically trigger something in them, right?
Definitely.
Could take away their very identity for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we do talk about that. And we also keep ourselves in check, right?
Of course.
We also realize that we're humans and we're all evolving. And there is a conscious change that has to be made in communication, and whether it's verbal or physical, and in how we show up. So it's also okay that if you make a mistake, you get called in and made aware of how that was harmful.
And that's good.
Address it, right? And have create space to heal with each other.
Of course.
But also to learn so that you don't do it again.
Yeah, and it's I think it's learning. It's and opening up your mind to educating yourself about, hey, I want to be open to this. I want to be aware of this. I want to be... I don't want to just be ignorant about this, a struggle going on besides my own. Because there is... We all have our own personal struggles, but I think that just being... Being aware that there's struggles all around us. And I think that also I appreciate that about Pride Lines. That it like really says like, hey, just be aware that this is your struggle is not the only struggle. There's plenty of struggles out there. We are as a community are coming together, which is what this center does, brings community together and like says, hey, we're all here for each other at the end of the day.
And we're in the fortunate position to be employees of this organization and to be compensated for doing this work, right? So in this space, we are who we are. We're representative of our community. We have all members of the people that we represent are represented on our staff, right? So we have conversations with each other, and we are going out into the community and educating people, and we are also educating each other. But that's because we know that we're stepping into that role when we are here, when we work here. It's important that out in the world, we also realize that it's not a trans woman's job to explain to whoever that they are a woman and that they have transitioned or that these are her pronouns or whatever the case is. That's not their responsibility. And they shouldn't be put in that role. So it's so important that we're mindful in every engagement that we have.
That's great.
To think, okay, am I showing up the best way right now? And what I tell people is, forget what you know. Always ask and always meet people at where they're at. So if you are going somewhere and you introduce yourself to someone, you know, hi, I'm Victor. I use he, him pronouns. Now you don't have to make an assumption whether I identify as male or female. Hi, I'm Victor. What's your name?
Oh, Hernando.
Hernando, what pronouns do you use?
He, him.
So now I know that that's how I'm going to identify you. Instead of, and I wouldn't just say, what pronouns do you use? I would probably say, do you mind if I ask what your pronouns are? And if you told me they, them, then I'm going to make sure to, you know, identify you as they, them. Whether or not I understand, whether or not the way that your pronouns align with, you know, how you present, none of that is my problem. That is who you are, and it's my job to respect who you are.
And that's all. And I saw it on the website that you guys actually put it in English and in Spanish.
That, thank you. I appreciate that. Because that is something that I actually went on and did myself.
Oh, you did?
Yes, because...
It's awesome. I really looked at... I really value that. Like, I was like, this is education.
I appreciate that, because I think it's important, you know, that we have our pronouns, and we do.
Exactly.
Right? Our cards actually don't have that yet, but we're going to change that.
Awesome.
And I was thinking about it, I was like, but wait a second. If I don't speak English, then I may not know how to, what your pronouns are, right? And so I speak Spanish, and I write in Spanish, so I knew how to change it to be English, excuse me, English and Spanish. The next step is Creole. Now, I don't know if he, him, they, them, she, her are pronouns in Creole, but if they are, I want to make sure we add them to that as well.
Yeah, and again, and it's space. Such a cultural thing. Like, I mean, my ex was Haitian, so it's just like he was very aware of it because of his friend, but his family, I mean, you could have explained to them 20,000 times that his best friend was a she, but they knew him as a he. So to them to transition
was difficult.
Was very difficult, and it was and even for her for his family, or for her family, for her, I'm sorry, yeah. For her family, it was very difficult.
Well, and a lot of times, people seek comfort in the, well, she knows, or he knows, or whatever it is, that I don't mean it, you know, it's just that I knew them when they were a little kid. That person in that moment, while they may know it, or they may not know it, might not also be telling you how, by you doing that, mm-hmm. you're hurting them.
Yep.
How it affects them. And that person, because they don't, it's not their job to inform, or they don't want to get into it, mm-hmm. now, every time they show up in their family, you know, gatherings or with friends, are being triggered, mm-hmm. aren't being seen fully. Like, what does it cost mm-hmm. your uncle or your best friend or your mother to say, you know what? She. How difficult is that? Even if you don't agree, if that is who you are, if that is who that person is, then it is our responsibility to honor that and to respect that.
It is. It totally is.
Our opinions are our opinions, and they shouldn't impact other people.
And the way I see you is, doesn't matter, because it's the way you see yourself. And if you're telling me you see yourself this way, then I need to take that as how you see yourself instead of how I think. Instead of how I think I should see you. Exactly. That's not how it works. Exactly. I'm like, my opinion of you doesn't matter. Like, what your opinion of yourself. So most of the time I really quote, like, it's like, what other people are thinking about you is none of your business. What you tell them specifically is when you're verbalizing, this is who I am mm-hmm. and this is what I believe. So respect me for that.
And it's not even how you see yourself or how I see you. It's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because no one has the right to tell anyone who they are.
Exactly.
Or to take that away from them.
Totally, totally.
You know, like you saying, I'm Colombian, or I'm from, I'm Latinx, mm-hmm. and somebody saying, oh, what part of Mexico are you from? They don't have the right to do that. You are Colombian.
Exactly.
And if you say, I'm not Mexican, I'm Colombian, then they better start recognizing you as Colombian and not fucking Mexican, because you're not Mexican.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a very different example. It's not around, that doesn't equate to the same matter.
And it's just
still.
More like for, like, because I really wanted, I mean, I think it's, I don't know, sometimes I feel like, do you feel like there is this voice out there for, let's just say, for Latinx gay queer men, that is this popular voice that represents us and that speaks to us out there? And who are these people to you that you feel that are these people?
Are you asking if there are advocates out there? There are. In fact, there are a lot of organizations, I wouldn't say a lot, but there are many organizations, mm-hmm. or several organizations that create education and that advocate for Latinx people mm-hmm. who are queer.
Okay.
If I were to tell you, I'd be lying. I'd be pulling the names out of the sky.
But there are out there, and they're definitely something we can look up and look
absolutely.
Up. And definitely I will look up some of for
fact,
you guys.
Latina Institute for... the Latina Institute for ...
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of work around advocacy for Latinx female-identified individuals.
Oh,
but they also are... in addition to being a social justice agency, they're a reproductive rights agency,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is
nice.
out there advocating for us. There are other organizations like that. There are people like, I don't know if you've ever heard, ever met, but he was based out of Miami. I'm not sure
mm-hmm.
if they are anymore. Gabby Garcia Vera, great young activist.
Mm-hmm.
Not that his age is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I love him because.
Mm-hmm.
Gabby used to work for us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but now has done amazing things and is just a great advocate. And if you, I'm not sure if you're aware of the National LGBTQ Task Force, but they're a nationwide advocacy agency for queer people and queer
mm-hmm.
rights. They have a conference every year
mm-hmm.
That's called Creating Change. And it's like an activists gathering, the activists gathering of the year. And
it
brings people from all parts of the world. Primarily from the United States,
mm-hmm.
and you would be surprised by how many people are out advocating for our community on a really regular basis. Are they big, well-known people? Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But is that where the change starts?
No.
So
and that's I really did see myself that I think in a broader spectrum, me as a gay, queer, Latin comedian, representing myself on stage was a big thing for me. Right. I think it was important for me to say, like, hey, I have never met a Colombian, queer, Latin male in these stages.
No?
Never.
Well, here you are.
And then, and so there, and so I, it was funny, a guy I met, he was a therapist, said to me, very randomly in a conversation that we had, like, and we didn't even connect ever again. But he said, if you don't see it, then be it.
It's the truth. If you have the strength,
and
go for it.
And so I thought, why not? Why can't I be this queer Latin Colombian male out there in the stages saying, hey, we have a voice.
Yeah,
there's a voice out here for us, and I think that my podcast, I'm Just Gaying, is that voice also, that, you know, really wants to show out there, hey, we're here, we're Latinx, and we're queer, and we want to, you know, and there is a voice.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely, you know, and it takes people like that, people like you, stepping up and all parts of the world, you know, and making. Not making, but educating people.
Totally.
At all steps, right?
Totally is about education. I think even the little that I do in educating my family in Colombia about what it means to be queer and Latin and, you know, and Colombian, it's also me saying, hey, I'm showing you guys these, that this is what you thought in your mind of who I am. It's not all I am. This is what I'm telling you that I am. So be aware of it.
And that your challenges are different.
Totally. Right?
Just because you may be Colombian and your family's Colombian and they have, you know, you're both immigrants and you may have certain challenges, your challenges aren't aligned necessarily with them because there's this additional layer to who you are, right? You're also a queer person. So there's prejudice and you know, in some places, harassment, bullying, that you'll experience that they won't.
Exactly.
Right? So making them aware of that. I actually had a similar conversation with my family during 2020, before the elections, and not to go into politics. But I had to explain to a family member how many of the issues that their candidate stood for was very real, like, against me. Not just as a queer person, but as somebody who's brown and as somebody who experiences not just, I mean, I don't experience a whole lot of harassment because of my gender identity or my sexual orientation, but I've experienced discrimination based on the color of my skin, based on the fact that I have this beard, based on the fact that I have dark features. I, you know, randomly selected in the airport there. Let me tell you what traveling through TSA is like. Let me tell you how the machine, because we have that global entry, how the facial recognition machine always recognizes, or rather selects me as a random check. It's discrimination. Let me tell you how I had, in Georgia, for my birthday, we went out to have lunch. I wasn't surprised by it, but it was definitely the first time I'd experienced this. We're sitting at the table at a very nice restaurant, and the waitress comes up. I shouldn't say waitress because that's gendered. The server comes up and looks at me and my husband now, who also has very dark features, goes, so where are you guys from? And I was like, no, sorry, not where are you guys from. So what are you guys? What are you guys? For a minute, I was like,
What?
Like, what am I? Like, do you think I'm an alien? Do I look like a drag queen and I don't realize it? What do you mean? What am I?
Human.
I've never been asked that question. And I actually had to, I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. And she goes, yeah, what are you? Where do you guys come from? I was like, we come from Miami. We come from South Florida. But, I mean, our parents are Cuban, and you know, my family also is Lebanese and French and Spanish. And I realized, All she wanted to know is, who are these fucking brown people sitting at the table?
Exactly.
That was it. And then she decided to tell me that because she's Italian, there are people that ask her if she's black. And I thought, oh, this is the level of racism that I don't experience in Miami, but that really does exist.
Oh my God, totally.
So I had to explain this to my aunt, who in her world, here in Miami-Dade County, a woman with means and access, just doesn't realize that anywhere else in the world, like, her candidate is out there saying, you, Victor, and you, my aunt, you're not equal. You don't deserve.
You don't even have to go as far as Georgia. Go to Clearwater, Florida. I walked into a room, because I'm in recovery, and I walked into a room that I thought, hey, this is a loving room because we're all in recovery and we're all trying to get sober together. And they looked at me up and down like I did not belong there. And why? And basically, I felt like they were telling me without saying anything, why am I in their meeting?
Wow.
That. And then, if I digress, then my ex was wondering why I did not want to stay in Clearwater. I wanted to go back to Miami, where you're right. I don't experience that. I don't walk into a room and people look at me up and down and with their eyes are telling me, you don't belong here. And because of this candidate that we used to have, they were allowed to look at me up and down
and
tell me, you don't belong here.
But you want to know what? I don't want to say I appreciate that we had those experiences, because I don't think anyone should have those experiences.
Of course not.
But for me, it's a very real reminder of what exists, that the privilege that I have, let's say, here in Miami-Dade County, that not everybody here in Miami-Dade County has. And it's a reminder that the issues of race, racism, are not just in podunk, you know, or that's terrible, I shouldn't use that, in like the mid, you know, some remote part of the country. It's right here.
It's here.
And we have to look for it, because in our skin here, we pass. And so it's our responsibility now to be allies and advocates for those who don't.
And that is amazing. And again, that I will revert back to that. That's why we have these centers. That's why we have pilots. That's why we have, you know, these allies that are protecting us and representing us. That's why I want to do this podcast, to like educate people and tell them, hey, this is a conversation. Not everybody thinks like you. And there are many ways of thinking. And even in within our own community, even within LGBTQ, there is many different ways of thinking and looking at things. So be open and respect everybody's point of view.
Absolutely. And also note that everybody's point of view and everybody contributes comes from their experience and what they know and how they understand what they know. So I always say, you know, again, I'm not the end all be all. I'm not the expert. And let me tell you what, I may have a stronger understanding than some people on some things, but I don't have the strongest on everything. And there may be things that I said today that were incorrect or were not the full scope of what the reality of the situation is, or that may have been triggering.
Exactly.
And you know what? If it was, I apologize for that, and I always welcome people to call me in and tell me. But also, it make it our jobs to constantly try to learn more so that we can be stronger.
But in that conversation, there is a safeness to saying to one another, or even for my listeners to say, like, hey, it's okay to make mistakes, like you said. It's okay to not understand. It's okay not to know. It's okay to, like, even ask questions, like we said, because maybe you... in this position are more aware, but there are people that are not. And you know, that is important for you to understand, hey, this is where you meet them and they meet you. And like you said, where do we meet each other?
Exactly.
Let's meet each other in that place where, hey, we care about each other and we want to educate each other.
And the caveat being, it is never okay, whether intentional or unintentional, to to hurt or cause harm.
Exactly.
So in the moments that you do that, when somebody says it or when you identify it, you, number one, create the opportunity to heal. And number two, sit with the discomfort of being wrong and being told you caused that harm and you this is how you showed up in that moment. Sit in that discomfort so that you know what it feels like and you can remember that discomfort so that moving forward you don't repeat the whatever it was that caused that.
And that's a great, I think that's a great lesson in life per se. In life in itself, because we've all made mistakes. We're human. At the end of the day, like you said, where are you guys from? We're humans.
Yeah.
We're humans.
What are you guys?
What are you guys?
What?
And so, what like, we are...
It's a big... What am I looking at something?
What am I...
Because my nails are painted?
So, just in that, we are humans. We're learning. We're growing. And so, that is also... And for you to understand. But I'm very grateful that you had this chat with me and we talked about a lot of things. Tell me a little bit about, I would like to know maybe like some things that you guys are working on or moving forward. I did see something coming up that you guys were going to have an event coming up soon.
So we're launching or getting ready to launch our second annual Colors of the Rainbow campaign. It's a month long campaign throughout Stonewall Pride Month, which is the month of June. Our goal is to raise $100,000 in 30 days.
Nice.
It's all virtual for the Washington States all this year. We're going to try to add an element in, somewhat in person. But it's actually a really easy way to support the work of the organization and to help us, especially, you know, in these times when the pandemic has impacted people financially, to support our programs and our services. All you do is you, not all you do, the way you get involved is to join our host committee. And depending, you can join, there are different levels of hosts, but let's say you wanted to join like the red host committee. All you're doing is pledging to create a fundraiser on your Facebook page to raise, let's say, $2,000. And throughout the month of June, you're just posting it and reminding people why you care about the organization, the kind of work that they do, and help support us that way.
And where do they go to become a host?
So we are getting everything up. So in the next week or so, they should definitely visit, or you all should definitely visit, pridelines.org. Not Priceline, like everybody seems to think we are. We do not have their money. It is Pride.
Not Priceline. Pride Lines.
PRIDELINES.org. And there will be information on how you can join as a host. And then we will be doing an actual information session for anybody that wants to learn more. It'll be virtual.
Great.
And we are hoping to plan an end of the campaign celebration.
Nice.
In person. We're trying to lock down those deals now.
That's awesome. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm very grateful you took the time to meet me. And at the end of the day, I always like to finish the conversation with 6 questions, just random questions that you want to ask me, 3 for you, 3 for me, and then we go from there. Just some random questions that we like to ask each other.
3 for you, 3 for me. You didn't give me a heads up. I thought about these better.
No, just random fun. This is fun. Fun questions.
Is it one and one and one?
One and one. Let's do one and one.
Okay, you first.
I go first.
Well, I don't know what kind of questions I'm getting.
You're like, what kind of questions are you going
to
ask
me? To me.
What's your favorite singer?
I don't have one.
Good.
I don't have a favorite singer. I love all kinds of music, and I have a terrible memory. So I will hear a song and be like, oh, I love this song. I don't remember when it came out. I don't know who the singer is. Don't ask me the question. But
you're like that singer.
That it's this person, and then I sing all the words wrong.
So do I. I'm like, listen, this is my song. I made it my own. Please let me just sing it. I don't care.
Yeah, let me be.
Let me.
It's great because it gives my staff something hopefully to laugh about. And they might think it's annoying because I'll break out into song in the middle of the day, like start yelling, and the words are wrong, or I make up my own lyrics.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun.
So, question for you. What was the last vacation or destination you went to prior to COVID, I guess?
I actually been traveling through COVID.
Oh, and you're sitting in my office?
I've been, every time I come back, I have to get tested. That's the thing. Because I have my mom who's 74 and I just can't go see her until I get tested. Okay. So I go to places and then as soon as I come back, I like quarantine, get myself tested.
Good.
And then I'm like... So I actually just went to D.C. for my birthday in March and we spent like 4 days over there. And actually, we didn't do anything. I mean, through COVID, you really...
Yeah, what are you going to do?
You can't do much. Like, there, none of the museums are open. There's, we walked around a lot. We saw, like, the outside. Nice. You know, my friend had never gone to D.C., so we went to the... I love D.C. I've always loved D.C. I mean, I feel very close to it. As a city, I feel very connected to it. I've traveled to D.C. many. My best friend lives in D.C., so I went to D.C., so it's beautiful. Didn't do much. Just kind of chilled and saw the outside monuments.
Okay.
And that's all we kind of did.
Yeah, that's better than nothing.
Hey, it's better than nothing.
Better than being stuck in an apartment.
Exactly. So I was like, but that was fun. What do you think you see yourself, I'm not even going to say in the next 5 years because that's like crazy, but like just next year.
Oh my God. Where do I see myself next year? So right here.
Yeah?
Right. Yeah. I mean, after 11 years in this position and after 15 with the agency as a board member and in this position, I think it's time for me to start planning an exit strategy, but given the long term, the long time I've been with the agency, it's not going to be an overnight thing. Mm-hmm. It takes planning, and so I think in the coming year, I'll probably start planning for a sabbatical.
Nice.
To rejuvenate, get myself ready to come back. And then use the remainder of my time here to develop a strategy for the organization to thrive without me and for somebody else to come in and sit in this chair and take it to the next level, which is healthy for every organization.
Exactly.
And then beyond this, I will most likely go full-time at my family's business, where my intention is to transition from COO to CEO.
Wow, okay,
and,
great.
Yeah, and given the nature of what we do, which is... You know, we're a publishing company, and we publish brands that promote travel and meetings and destinations.
Mm-hmm,
nice. I'd like to use a lot of my time traveling and enjoying
gonna,
the world.
That's going to be fun.
I hope so. That's the goal. If it's not, I'm doing something wrong.
Exactly.
So, so you told me you are married now.
Married.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Who are you married to?
His Jose. His name's he's Mexican actually.
Okay.
So it's awesome. We know each other
actually from Mexico.
Actually from Mexico. Okay. So like I don't know if when you're married to somebody you're kind of Mexican too.
Yeah. It impacts who you like.
Exactly.
And who you are.
So but we've known each other a long time, like 15 years actually.
Wow.
And so like we met when we were younger and like we kind of dated and then we were like, I wasn't ready, he wasn't ready. And then we, after my 6 year relationship, like a year later, I reconvened with him and he's like, hey, what's going on? And I was like, hey. And so we like kind of talked for a year and then he was like, I want to get I know we belong together.
You sparked the, re-sparked
yeah,
the flame.
Yeah, it was like re-sparked. Then I was like, he's like, I love you. I know you love me. And I was like, I do love you. And so I kind of was like hesitant. And then I was like, you know what? This is love. Like when you love someone, you care about them completely and no reservations and no like qualms about it. And I was like, okay. So he gave me the ring and it was very fluid. Like it was like, easier than I thought it would be.
Getting married?
Yeah, like
it's
it was
signing a paper.
Exactly. I was just like, with my ex, we had planned it and it had become an issue. And so when, like, with him, it just was like, okay, yeah, we're married. Da, da, da. We had a little get together, and I was like, okay, well then that was that. It literally passed like this, and it was like, voof, and I was like, oh, okay, well that was quick because we were planning with my ex for months, and it was. Drama, so maybe this is the way that it's supposed to be, just painless.
I think so. Let me tell you what, I get it. 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, I would suggest to people, please make it painless, because if not, it's not cool.
I agree. I think it's your wedding, it's your celebration, it's gotta be about you.
It's gotta be
easy and enjoyable.
Exactly, so. And last question for you. Last question, actually, because we're hitting a mark right now. food?
All of it. I haven't met one I don't enjoy.
You don't deny anything. No. You're like everything.
Everything.
Everything, everything, everything.
As long as it's not something that the texture is going to make me gag, I am in.
You're
I
in. 100%.
I love it.
You hear it, listeners. Yeah. He says everything and everything.
Listen. I don't particularly care for soup. Because what is it?
Really? Who? I don't. It's, people try to get. Colombians love soup. They try to give me soup with everything, and I'm like, why are you wasting calories on this liquid? Hey, and thank you for joining us at I'm Just Gain with your host, Hernando del Castillo. We're here to have conversations, have good times, and have moments with all of you. We'll love for you to support. Come join us at anchor.fm/ I'm Just Gain. Definitely come and subscribe, listen on Spotify, and follow us. And if you like to support us, it'll be awesome if you go to anchor.fm, /, I'm Just Gain, and hit the support button. We have support monthly contributions from $99, $4.99, and $9.99 a month. $9.99, are you out of your mind? Thank you for being a part of this conversation, and we'll see you soon. Everybody, and I'm so excited to have our guest with us. I have Kiba, singer, songwriter from Trinidad and Tobago, joining us today at I'm Just Game with your host Hernando del Castillo. Say hi to us, Kiba.
Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you with us. And I tell us a little bit something about Kiba.
All right. Well, Kiba was born in Trinidad and Tobago. But I've been living in Florida for about 15 years now.
Wow.
And I sing, I write music, and I just love to make people feel good through music, you know, and feel better when times are rough through music.
Yes, I got the pleasure of seeing you at the Villain Theater while I was working there one night, and you just wowed me with your voice. So I was like, I need to have her on my show because everybody needs to listen to Kiba. Everybody needs to hear her voice because she is amazing. Where do you get your inspirations from?
You know, a lot of what I write is inspired by personal experience. And I would say, as a woman of color looking for success in my life, in my career, in my relationships, you know, like in the world of love,
yes.
I'm inspired by just the whole climb to sort of become the woman that I want to be, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And do you think that music is really, that's the journey to becoming that woman?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
For me, yes. I can't imagine my life without music. And I think music has made me a better person and a better woman by far. Like, it's just helped me grow out of my shell. Like,
you had a shell?
I used to be so shy.
You had a shell?
Yes.
No. Audience, if you see her, it should look like she had no shell. But what was that about? Why do you remember having that shell, and why?
Yeah, I think that there was just something about when I was growing up that I started to filter myself, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I was scared that I always knew I wanted to be a singer, and I think I was scared of that dream, that it was not going to be possible living in somewhere like Trinidad. Like,
yes.
I always wanted to be like a pop star, a superstar, you know. And it's like, I come from a small island, and you know, it's not even usual to have a dream like that. Most times you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or something that's really conventional.
Exactly.
So for me, like, I always had that dream like in my pocket. And I think I kind of ran from it a little bit because I was afraid that it was not attainable.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, as a gay man and a queer Latinx, I feel like that
we do run away a lot from our dreams. I tell people, like, I came out twice to my mom. I came out first as a gay man, and then I came out her secondly as a comedian. And the second part was worse, because she couldn't understand it. She was like, why are you doing this to me? Yeah. You went to school. You're a professional. You have a degree. You graduated. You're a director in a hotel. And I'm like, mom, I hate my life.
You're right.
I can't do this anymore. Do you not understand that I want to make people laugh? And that dream is scary.
Yes.
It's a scary thing to be an artist. Like, you are I saw myself, like, filtering myself a lot as an artist. And I was like, because I was scared of what people were going to think of me. And I'm like, why am I doing this? If I want to be an artist, I need to be my most, like, authentic self.
Yes. Yes.
And that is a journey.
It's a journey peeling back the layers.
Yes.
And I feel like with every album that I work on, or with every song that I write, like, that's my mission, is to peel back the layers of my life that sort of filtered who I am now, to just kind of peel that back and get back to, like, my truest, most authentic self.
Tell us a little bit about this album. Tell us.
So my most recent album is actually Kiba and the Usual Suspects Live from the Dungeon. And that was a live album that we wanted to do, to just celebrate our growth as a band and just learning to do our thing live.
Yes.
And be vulnerable and exposed in front of a crowd.
Yes.
So we wanted to capture that, and so we did that in real time with cameras and audio, like,
really?
Happening at the same time in the studio.
There's videos of this on YouTube?
On YouTube, yes.
Tell us your handle so people know where to go.
Sure, Kiba Music everywhere. I'm Kiba Music, K-E-B-A Music. Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you are, you can find me.
So you guys, so you guys were live, and then you the whole time videotaping the whole show, like live, and like no editing, no nothing. You're just raw,
right? Right. Like, that was the intention, because it's like it takes a while to get to that stage where you could just like say, okay, go. Turn it on, and we're doing it. So that was a really enjoyable process. And then after that, I sort of switched gears. I still work a lot with my band, but I do a lot more of my own production now.
Nice.
And I took that opportunity to really go inward and start figuring out, like, what kind of music I really want to make and I really connect with at this stage in my life.
Yes.
So since then, I put out three songs: Somebody, which was my wedding song, Pillow Talk, which is just like a 90s love jam, and Loco for the Coco, which is
Loco for the Coco,
which is like an ode to my Caribbean roots.
Loco for the Coco, yes. I love it. Yes, audience, we need to listen. That should be everybody's theme.
Yes.
Loco for the Coco. So what inspired Loco for the Coco?
Well, Loco for the Coco was actually inspired by the fact that one night I went to perform, and I'm performing, like, I'm in the middle of my song, and this old white guy just comes up and tries to kiss me on my mouth, mid-song.
Why are people like that?
I know, and it was just kind of like the, what do you call that, like the straw that broke the camel's back for me, where, you know, as performers, as entertainers, and I've talked to about this with, like, other black women, that a lot of the times we're hypersexualized because we're entertainers, you know, and our charisma is taken for, like, oh, that's some kind of invitation to, like, invade my personal space. So I wanted to write about it, but I wanted to do that in the way that, like, traditionally, like, calypso and Caribbean music that I grew up with is done, where, like, we still retain, like, our power and our charisma our sexiness and, you know, all that power and joy, even though we're talking about serious issues.
Oh, yeah.
So Loco for the Coco is supposed to be like a fun song, a celebration, but it's like, don't F with me.
Don't F with Kiba. The operative word is don't F with Kiba. I do not want to F with Kiba. But I want to dance that loco for the coco.
Yes.
We definitely, I might like put some of it in this podcast so people
Please
can listen
do.
For it. Yes. Maybe you'll send me some, like a little tidbit of it.
Oh,
so
yes.
So I can like just put a little bit so people can get a little bit of taste of loco.
Taste of loco
for the coco. I'm like, so this is not your first album. The album, you've had how many albums?
Yeah, so I have an EP called Film Strip. That I put out in 2018, and then Live from the Dungeon, and then this so far singles, but I'm working on a new album right now. Yeah,
exciting.
Yeah.
So when do you think that's going to come out? Future tense at some point?
Yes, so definitely 2022. We're looking to drop that in 2022. But before that, I'm doing some reimagined versions of some of the same songs that I put out in 2020.
Oh, okay,
so,
cool.
So look out for like that reimagined version of Loco for the Coco.
Okay,
it's
that's
gonna be fabulous.
That sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The song that I really gravitated to was that song that you sang that night at Villain, and that was like a really, where did the inspiration for that song came from?
Perfect. So Perfect was written, I was actually in a recording session for someone else, mm-hmm. and I was sitting there, and one of my really good friends who's a guitarist, he was getting so frustrated with himself, you know,
really?
Trying to lay down these parts
yes.
in the studio. And for me, he's one of the best guitarists that, like, I've ever seen
really?
Or played with.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like, it was such a human moment, and I could see myself reflected in him, you know, like, and we were talking about this earlier, mm-hmm. as an artist, like, the evolution never ends. You're
mm-hmm.
always really hard on yourself to, like, be better, be the
so
best
hard.
Version of yourself. And sometimes it really helps to have people around you who are just like, you know what, you are perfect just the way you are,
mm-hmm.
like you're loved just the way you are.
Yes.
Like sometimes you just need that
you
reinforcement.
Do.
Or to just be able to look in the mirror sometimes and pause and be like, you know what, like this is where I'm at
mm-hmm.
now and I love myself here.
Yes.
Like I love myself here
mm-hmm.
and now.
And who is that person for you that says that to you?
Oh, man.
I think I know, but... Because I just found some news.
My husband definitely
Devin! We love you, Devin.
Yeah, so my husband definitely inspires me a lot in just, like, reminding me to love myself.
It's,
yeah.
And yeah, we were talking about that earlier about like we are people don't understand that the road that we travel as artists is a very difficult road. People think that being a lawyer, a doctor, you know, those are like the most like, oh, you're gonna become that, and
yeah.
then all of a sudden you're like, artists work hard all the time, and people think we just go on stage and just go on, and they don't understand the work behind
absolutely
going on stage.
Yeah, it takes years, it takes a lot of soul searching, it takes
tears.
Sweat, blood. You know, it takes so much.
You were with those shoes, and those shoes are not, those shoes were, you know, you gotta
my feet have bled.
Thank you,
yes.
And you're like, and you're out there like bringing it, and your feet are like. help me.
Yeah, you don't feel it until after either.
Sure.
Like it's after you're like, oh, my feet are destroyed. Okay, because the adrenaline
yeah,
really just keeps you going.
And yeah, your energy on stage is so like hypnotic. Like it,
yeah.
I literally said to you earlier, I was hypnotized by you. I was working at the Villain, and I heard your voice from the outside, and it like drew me in. Like like that moment. I don't know. I'm obsessed with the Little Mermaid.
Yes.
So that moment with Eric is like he sees the girl singing in the thing and gets hypnotized by her, and I'm like, that was me. I'm like, who is that angel? And I went inside the theater, and I just sat there for like 10 minutes, and they were like, hey, the door. And I'm like, nah, you know, dude, I'm volunteering. I was like, I'm gonna sit here and watch
right.
her right now. I'm gonna stay in this moment right now, because this song Perfect just like touched me in like those layers, like you said, that we gotta, there's songs that peel those layers, and that song was like, you are perfect just the way you are. Your journey here, enjoy it. Don't look at that journey like the end. It's like the beginning, and every single part of that journey is important.
Absolutely.
You know, so like, the thank you for that song. Like, people need to listen to it. And Perfect, you can find it on...
That's on Filmstrip, the EP. You can find that on Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify. Yeah, just...
And so that's on Filmstrip.
On Filmstrip, awesome. The EP, yeah.
How long did it take to do Filmstrip?
Probably a couple years.
A couple? Oh,
really? Yeah.
Wow.
See? We wrote the songs in under a year, but then there's a whole discovery of, okay, the image and how I wanted to present that album. And,
of course.
I wanted it to be like almost a cinematic feel, a cinematic soundtrack to my life, you know, like to coming into womanhood. Because I felt like at that point in my life, I was making decisions where... I was going from being a girl and kind of like letting my emotions be determined by other people and to being more assertive and being a woman and like making my own choices.
So it's like your growth. That CD is like you growing up.
Exactly. That's awesome. So the music was just sort of accompanying that journey, and that took time,
of course.
Yeah.
Like growth.
Exactly.
And where we go back to the fact that people think you just go out there and sing, and they don't understand the years that it took for you to get to that moment where that's when people get to listen to that moment where you've worked so hard and listen to your growth.
Yeah.
And listen to that CD and listen to those songs that, you know, you worked so hard and you wrote. And it's amazing. Like, and you said you always loved to write. Was it?
Yes.
Since you were younger?
Yes. I always loved to write poetry. I've always been obsessed with words.
Words, really?
You know, just like.
What's your favorite word?
Oh, man. That's hard.
My favorite word is this. I'll give you time to think about just one word. But my favorite word is this French word called pamplemousse.
Pamplemousse.
It's like perfect. It just has all the perfect peace.
Yeah.
It's like it's like perfect, like pamplemousse.
Yeah.
And people are like, "What is that? Grapefruit?"
Speaking of French words, there's a French word I love called décolletage.
Décolletage.
And it's like that part of a woman's neck. Like, it's not quite cleavage, but
it's like that sexy part. Like, it shows your clavicle a
little
bit. And you can, like, accentuate it a little bit.
Yeah.
And it just shows, this is me. I'm not showing you all of it, but you
it's
get a little
sensual.
Bit. Yeah, you get a little bit of it. Just taste of me. I love that. Décolletage. That's a word that we use a lot in the spa industry, because I've been in the spa industry and they use that all the time for like facials.
Yeah.
Like, and now we're going to touch the décolletage and we're going to go up. We're going to massage that area. We're going to like make sure that it's moisturized and hydrated.
Yes.
So I'm like, I know that word. And then I work with an English line, so they would say like, décolletage.
Yeah.
with that English accent. I'm like, it's French though.
Décolletage. Yes. Awesome word.
So obsessed with words since you were young.
Yeah. And now I'm much more of a conscious writer in terms of like, I think I approach writing a little bit differently now, where I'm way more intentional.
Uh-huh.
And when I was writing Filmstrip, it was sort of cathartic. Like, it's kind of like what just comes out. And then after, you're sort of putting together the pieces of, oh, this is what I was going through, or this is what I was trying to say. But I feel like now, it's like I still have those moments, but now I'm more of a woman when it comes to even writing. Like, I'm more assertive, just going into a topic and understanding what it is I'm trying to say and how I want to deliver that.
And I think that growth has happened, you know, that with Filmstrip, and now you're this well-rounded artist that, you know, it's amazing. You are, you know, energetic and eclectic and a great performer. Like, you really, like hype up the audience and, like, really feel you up there, and your presence is, you know, very like enigmatic presence that you have. So I was really grateful to get to see you perform, and thank you for being on the show with us. I'm really happy that you came to I'm Just Gaying, and
yes!
We have Kiba here with us, and we're gonna listen to a lot more of her. Where do you think you'll be in the, you're gonna be performing, where else?
So on July 26th, mm-hmm. for anyone who's in Miami, mm-hmm. I will be at Showfields mm-hmm. doing Music Mondays on July 26th, and that's an awesome venue.
Yes.
It's going to be a really great show. It's going to feel theatrical and beautiful, but intimate.
Great. Showfields?
Showfields. That's on Lincoln Road in Miami.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And anywhere else that you'll be on?
Right now, most of my dates are in fall.
For sure people can come and see you the 26th of July.
And then just follow me or check my website, kibamusic.com. I always post my shows there.
Awesome.
I'll be in Bimini later this year.
That's
always a fun gig. Yes. So if you want a little vacation,
I'm going. I'm there.
Make sure to follow me so you know when we're doing that one.
That's
and
cool.
You can get your tickets.
So definitely come and check out Kiba and the Usual Suspects will be July 26th.
Yes.
At Showfields in Lincoln Road.
Yes.
We're super excited. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for exposing yourself to my audience. And, you know, so glad that you decided to come to I'm Just Gaying.
Thank you for having me.
Yes,
I was so happy that we met.
Oh, my God.
And
yes.
That you felt like... I'm honored to be here that you felt that you could reach out to me to come on the podcast.
Thank
I feel honored that you would have me on your show. So, thank you.
Thank you. And we'll definitely see more of Kiba in the future. And she's going to fill out... Where are we going to fill out?
Madison Square Gardens.
So thank you, audience, for being here. If you like what you listen to, come and subscribe and come and follow kibamusic.com as well. And you could follow me on anchor.fm/I'm Just Gaying. And thank you for being a part of the show. And we'll be back soon. Goodbye.
Bye.